And once again, we caution you. These stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
Excellent. Under the circumstances, formal dress is to be optional.
Bonus Material Podcast. I'm Tom Carnell.
I'm Heather Buckley.
And I'm Langley West.
And tonight is episode 53, and tonight we're covering a time-honored classic, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It seems very super exciting by a little bit of the teasing that we put out there on the social media.
Yeah, people, this is a nostalgic film in spades.
Absolutely.
It's such a part of virtually everyone's life that when you talk about it, even if they're too cool for school, they'll still go, there's a part of them that loves this shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everyone knows the words to certain songs.
My sister and I, when I would go from Jersey to Rhode Island, that's as long as the cassette would be to play the entire movie that came with the 20th anniversary one that I had. So we would take every part on the way up to Rhode Island and back.
Well,
the whole
thing. And everyone knows like the classic. I want to go through all of the songs later, but
are we going to have a sing along?
No. There are classics that everyone knows, like The Time Warp and Sweet Transvestite, and it's universally thought of as a well-written sort of rock opera, for want of a better word.
Sure.
But there's some really shitty songs in this.
It's, well...
Sword of Damocles is a terrible song.
I know it, though.
Yeah, I know.
The movie itself, for me, seems real schizophrenic, and I don't know... Why this is for me, but the first half, the half with all the songs that everybody knows, and I love.
The build-up is great. Up until the time that Sweet Transvestite ends, the film, it's like, it feels obligated to give you a story, and it starts world-building real fast.
Yeah.
It starts just establishing relationships, and sort of makes the point, but ultimately the film doesn't have a point.
Right, and that's the second half for me kind of, I don't know, it just falls flat, fizzles out. And so now when I watch it, I watch the first half and then I turn it off.
I was reading earlier that initially there's a print of it out on one of the special editions that it was going to do a Wizard of Oz thing where the entire film was going to be in black and white up until the time, A, that the door opens on the Transylvanians, and B, it was going, when Frank goes up in the elevator for some reason, at the end of Sweet Transvestite, it was going to cut the color. But I like the idea of it being black and white up until the time
that's
the doors open.
Yeah.
So yeah, 1975, made on a $1.4 million budget.
Which is amazing when you think about it.
At the time. One of the things I found in looking over the IMDb was the three producers, Lou Adler, who's essentially a music producer who had done Animal House and Up in Smoke, John Goldstone, and Michael White. Both of those guys have heavy Monty Python ties.
Wow.
And so they produced, Richard O'Brien wrote it with, and then the script was written by him and the director, Jim Sharman.
Do we know how long the stage production had been going before somebody says, hey, let's make a movie?
No, I don't. Do you, Heather? At all?
How many what?
How long did the stage play ran?
God, I don't know. I don't have my precious Rocky Horror Picture Show book, which I probably hawked for some beer in my youth. Don't have it with me with all that information on it. I did see Rocky Horror Show drop the picture in New York City with Joan Jett, I think maybe 5 years ago.
That's cool. Yeah.
The revival of that, they kept rotating people in. Like, they brought Dick Cavett in as the criminologist.
Right.
There was a few actors that sort of cycled in and cycled out. Another thing I found that I thought I would get to later, but I'll get to it now, is everyone knows the cast. You know, Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, Barry Bostwick, Richard O'Brien, Patricia Quinn, Nell Campbell, Meatloaf, Charles Gray. I have lots to say about all those guys too. But some of the people that were interested in this is really fascinating. Vincent Price was offered the role of the criminologist, which would have changed the film completely.
Completely.
Steve Martin auditioned for Brad.
That also would have been very. I'm glad that
it's
didn't happen.
It's a young
happen.
Steve Martin.
I know it's a young Steve Martin, and young Steve Martin was kind of unhinged.
Yeah.
And so like I think that would have been a bad choice.
Mick Jagger wanted to be Frankenfurter. Back when the $1.4 million budget was two or three times that.
Yeah.
Mick Jagger was considering it. Let's see.
I think he could have, like, superficially done it, but I don't think he could have acted the way that, you know.
Well, he acted in performance and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, but
the one that blew my hair back was that this would have been mid-70s at this point, mid-70s, 76, 77.
Right.
One of the people that were interested in the role of Eddie was Elvis Presley.
Wow.
Yeah, just chew on that for a minute. Like, in the middle of this weird thing, Elvis Presley comes out as a biker and sings this. Yeah, that blew me away. I thought that would be amazing.
I can't imagine. Can't imagine.
He
doesn't seem to me to be, like, the fishnet-friendly set.
Well, I know, but this, I guess, recently in, one of the revival things, Meatloaf.
Sure.
Said that initially one of the names that was being bounced around was Elvis Presley.
Wow. Like,
whoa.
Wow, shit.
And the movie was shot where a bunch of old Hammer films, in the same studio where there are a bunch of the old Hammer films.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That is true. Pinewood Studios.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember as a little Heather watching it, but I saw Pinewood Studios and my love of the Hammer films and Horror of Dracula. I was very excited to see that come up.
They managed to get that tone pretty well. But by the time you hit the Frankenfurter place, it's got a real gothic-y kind of spooky vibe going.
Right.
Up until the time that, you know, the reveal on Frank, it's genuinely like, what's going on here?
Right.
You know, it has the potential to be fairly scary.
Yeah. Riff Raff is terrifying at first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So overall, I guess now that I blather about all that stuff, and I do want to go back over the cast, but can we go around the table and say, are we a fan and do we have any mea culpas to do on this one? Because I do.
I was telling Heather before we got started, I'm not a huge fan of the product itself.
Okay.
But I am a huge fan of what it's doing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It started fandom. Yeah.
Let me take that back. But it's a big part of fandom. It was because of fandom that we're even talking about this film now.
If it had just been a movie and, you know, people went and sat and watched it, it wouldn't be what it is now.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of the first half as far as filmmaking goes. Mm-hmm. I love that. The second half loses me, but yeah, I'm a fan. I'm just not an uber fan. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Heather.
I am a fan of the first and second film. I can't say that I'm an obsessive fan that would dress up or had the need to dress up, but I understand the don't dream it, be it is very strong for me.
Yeah.
Because I offer that off to the audience out there who, unlike me, does not look like they're from a Mad Max wasteland every day. But I feel that Rocky Horror helps them, at least for a small part, maybe feel empowered by wearing like heels, fishnets, and red lipstick. So I go, let there be lips.
And I
support it.
Well, what's interesting is for a lot of kids, it's the first sort of quote-unquote body film that
right.
they're allowed to go see, because it's a musical, it's a major studio, how bad could it be? But its message, there's a subversive message there that's pretty clear. I mean, the film experiments with homosexuality, with cross-dressing.
And I think that's why it's so important, is because it offers a mainstream gate into what that time was really, really alternative.
Yeah, this is before the internet.
Yeah.
Or maybe you saw a transvestite mentioned on Benny Hill.
Right, and it was always, you know, always be the butt of somebody's joke.
Right.
As a kid, when you see it, it is, man. It's, you know, it's naughty. It's mm-hmm. subversive.
Speak to your dislike of it, because I think it's fascinating, because that also exists in my life as well, and I could totally see from a counterculture eye why saying don't dream it, be it, why being subversive to people who are not subversive or sort of already doing it would bug people.
Well, in that aspect, I think it's pandering a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like... Nah, pandering's a bad word. Posing. Like, you get the idea that, like, it's cool that we're doing this, but you know what it is?
It was like wonder-breading the whole fetish
right.
stuff. It was making it at least palatable to get through the door, where anything more severe would have been too controversial.
I guess it's not the film so much that bugs me, it's the people who go aren't the people you've been talking about, Heather. The people who, you know, like, I'm going to dress up like this today, or I'm going to feel like this today, or I'm going to pretend they're slumming, I think.
I want to tell them that they could dress like that all the time, though. I think
exactly.
some of them might lose their job.
Well, it's like Halloween, right? One of the things I noticed was last Halloween was sort of, I call it the slutization of it.
Sure.
Where everything now, there's a sexy Jesus costume.
Right.
But
Jesus was sexy. He was naked
Jesus.
With those abs. With that little thing dying on a cross. How is that not fucking hot, man?
But the point being that for some people, it's the thing that makes them either... consider something they haven't considered before, or
sure.
take a stand somewhere. Maybe, and in a lot of ways, Rocky Horror is the film that lets people say, begin the process that results in I'm gay, or I'm
right.
I'm this, or I'm that, or whatever.
And that's why I think it's so important.
Agreed.
And regardless of whether I like the songs or what, you know, it's hugely important.
Yeah, I think the film is. And here comes the full disclosure part. I think the film is okay. As musicals go, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. The first three songs, four songs, are jaw-dropping. And then it just binds itself in its own machinery.
Mm-hmm.
There may or may not be photos from 1979 to 1981 of me shadow casting this thing.
I hope they find your way online.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say, anybody listening who knew Tom from that time and has any of these photos, we would we'll pay you.
Tom with really long hair, and it's really horrible. But for me, it was all of that. It was a chance to hang out at night. It was a chance to be naughty. It was a chance to meet girls. It was a chance to meet girls who you were reasonably assured that. It's like picking up girls outside of Planned Parenthood. You're reasonably assured they put out.
There's a moral ambiguity.
Yeah. Or at least you know that they're willing to play the game.
Sure.
Also, I'd like to mention, don't you feel that it was much more a huge part of the goth community than it was of the punk community, which would speak to some of the naysayers on your podcast?
But you know what?
Who could obviously point out a poser, regardless of how hot that chick looks like in underwear.
I
would still be annoyed.
I, 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 what what's interesting is again, when we started putting up these little teasers up on Facebook, the breadth of people that were liking it, you know, they're from artists to punks to goths to people who you least expect.
Right.
This film, and that's one of those things that it just reaches right past all your defenses for some reason, whether you like it or you don't like it.
Well, I think that that's another important thing that it does, is it allows you, whoever you are and whatever your normal life is, to be okay with homosexuality, transvestites, whatever, you know. Whereas in your normal life bubble, that might not be okay.
Yeah.
Early on, I think part of the problem for me was I came from this kind of Hesher background, you know. It was like, you know, you have to listen to Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was a very kind of bro-ish before bros were
I guess.
Yeah. So it was tough to say, hey, I like this movie with this guy wearing these fish
underwear. Yeah. And you know what's odd is I used to see those very people coming, you know, they come with their girlfriends.
Yeah, I don't know how Black Sabbath is very bro-like.
No,
I could say that it promotes like a sort of form of masculinity, which is not wearing fishnets.
Right. Well, no, it's not that. It's the guys that were listening to that stuff in the early to mid.
Gotcha.
You know, it was.
So they were jocks.
It was nothing to. No,
they were not
burnouts. Not jocks. Think metalheads, kind of like that, only proto.
I thought they would be accepting with their leather and spikes.
No. They're real, like, oh, you know.
Throwbacks.
It was a massive outcry when Rob Halford came out.
Oh, I bet. Guys wearing black armbands.
That's what I'm feeling. They have no place to talk. There'd be a lot of leather and spikes there, and boys in makeup.
Yeah, but it's part of that time when people are processing all that stuff. Who am I? What am I? What do I like? And you know, but I remember because I started to go 78, 79.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time I was 19. Come on, it's
a party.
It's a big party every weekend. You knew if nothing else was going on, you could always go down to the theater that was showing Rocky Horror, and at least there'd be people to talk. It'd be people there,
right?
And it'd be people in weird costumes, and it'd be fun. And it usually was fun.
Yeah. What was everybody's first exposure to it? Because I think my first exposure to it's a little odd.
Okay.
Not odd in interesting, but just. My first exposure to the Rocky Horror Picture Show was in the pages of Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Oh, okay.
Because Forey would put in anything that it was, even if it was just obliquely related to horror. So I'd see photographs that show, you know, Frankenfurter with this thing laid out on a slab, and never occurred to me as a kid that this is, one, a musical, two, kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought it was a horror film.
Right.
And then, so when I actually got to see it and then start learning about it and learn about the show and all the people who would go and all that stuff, it was kind of, it was surprising. Because I thought it was a straight-up horror film. A low-budget one, but straight-up horror film, all the same.
What about you, Heather?
The first time, and that gave me a second to think about it, was during the 25th anniversary release, because it was unavailable for me to get it on VHS before that, really, in my neighborhood store. And I vaguely read about it, and when I saw it, I didn't become obsessed with it, but I became heavily fascinated with it by the 20th anniversary thing, which had all of the cassettes and the booklets in it. Mm-hmm. I had the Rocky Horror Picture Show book, and I believe I had the poster with all the legs, the one that you'll find on the Wikipedia.
Somewhere around here, I have that.
The book?
Yeah, that whole box set that came out.
Yeah, I definitely have the box set in my apartment at the moment, but I don't know what happened to the book, which had talked about the fandom. Mm. And, of course, I read about it before that in Jay Hoberman's Midnight Movies, because there's a full chapter, of course,
sure,
on Rocky Horror Picture Show, because that is the number one Midnight Movie. Wait.
What?
No, that's the second Midnight movie. The first one was El Topo.
Right.
And the guy who brought El Topo to the Strip is the guy who brought Rocky Horror Picture Show to the Strip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is it still playing at the Waverly?
It is not, because the Waverly is now IFC Center in the East Village. Because
it first played there, and I remember you would always hear about people like Dory Hartley, who was a New York person who did Frank. There was a guy, Sal Pyro, who's, I guess, the head of the fan club. Those guys have made whole careers, like whole livelihoods up. Yeah,
sure.
All of us.
They were the original sort of fan guys, and they all started, and there's, God, what is it? I think it's on the 20th anniversary VHS release that they have that little tiny doc at the beginning that talks about Sal and everyone putting the stuff on at the Waverly Theater and how they saw it, and they were mesmerized by it, and then they kept seeing it again and again, and other people were mesmerized to see it again and again and again. And I would believe that at that certain age range and time period, it would hard to be called poser on them, because we're talking about like old school New York City art interesting, probably theater people who are also interested in Rocky.
Right.
A lot of theater people coming together and putting this thing on and developing the phenomenon of what we have today. Because that's a fucking phenomenon just to happen out of nowhere, not corporately pushed like some movies like Room for the Genetic Opera, but literally something that people put together.
And yeah, it's bled over to people now shadow cast Room for the Genetic Opera. I think they do Devil's Carnival, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Whatever other half-assed thing Darren Lynn Bousman's doing.
I got a buddy playing Eddie right now down in Mount Vernon.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, virtually every city has it. What's interesting is that if you go, I remember back in the day, you would go and you would visit other cities and you would make a deal beforehand, like foretell if you're coming to this other team.
Right.
You would, But it was interesting that from place to place, the variances in audiences' responses.
Yeah.
Like some. Calling Brad an asshole is pretty standard, but little shades of differences throughout it, as you go from, let's say, the South Bay to the North Bay, or from New York to Chicago. I always found that really interesting.
The different places created their own.
Yeah, expressing itself in its own way, you know?
And the idea of talking back to it, creating a script that you're talking back to, bringing little items.
Yeah.
That, then making it almost like its own like personal 3D experience, theatrical experience, and then people performing on stage and how that happened organically.
Right.
Back in the 80s.
Without Rocky Horror Picture Show, we don't get Mystery Science Theater.
Right. Yeah. Where we have that interaction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Panned on initial release in 75. It was a year later they moved it to the Midnight Show at the Waverly. And it played there forever, as far as I could. I know, it continues to play nonstop. I think somewhere there's always a Rocky.
Somewhere there's always a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Uh-huh. One of the other things I found out was David Bowie's stylist Pierre LaRoche designed all the makeups and all the looks of all the characters, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know,
that is cool.
My first experience with it was we went with a friend to Cinema 150 in somewhere near San Jose, and went back, took friends. You wouldn't believe this. This is crazy. And then met a girl, and next thing you know, there you go.
That could go so many different.
Yeah, and it did. But it was great fun. It was great fun. Oddly enough, this was... I notice how I'm changing the subject right now. Only thing, really, that Richard O'Brien did. I mean, he wrote Shock Treatment.
Right.
Which I love.
Do you really? I find Shock Treatment unbearable.
I like it better than Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Really?
I like the songs better. I like the artifice. I like that it's so garish. I like that it predicted reality TV.
Yeah.
Years and years and years.
I'll give you
that's true.
In a surveillance society, which it also predicted, garishly run by ghoulish people. No, I'm a huge fan. I knew Rocky for a bit. I heard about Shock Treatment, which a lot of folks didn't hear about at the time. Probably through the 25th anniversary edition because some of the songs were on there. And I was at ShopRite as, again, a little Heather. And I saw, because the video store went out of business, they had a ShopRite where they were selling the VHSs. And I went, oh, my God, it's Shock Treatment on Key Video VHS. Cut back to older Heather Buckley now. I still have that Key Video VHS. And then from Walmart, I have it for $5. They may have cost the same price. Maybe it's only worth $5. But I like Shock Treatment a lot. I think it's incredibly strange to watch. And to me, has zero poser veneer on it. Because it can't.
Yeah, oh, no,
yeah. It's fucking
thing. I remember people being so excited about the possibility of it coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they saw it, and oh, they hated it. People hated it.
For folks listening who aren't familiar, you know, they may only know Rocky Horror, what is Shock Treatment?
It was the sequel that Richard O'Brien did because they wanted a sequel.
Right.
And he stitched together, narratively it has Brad and Janet are back, and they're in this weird future, not future society, and it all, for me, it gets very sketchy. One of the songs, I like the title track, the song Shock Treatment.
Shock Treatment is good.
It's a good song, but everything else, to me, just gets really clumsy.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's like, yes!
And then supposedly,
right now,
there was going to be a direct sequel with Frankenfurter returning called Revenge of the Old Queen. But
didn't go anywhere.
And then they just announced for fall 2016 a remake with Laverne Cox as Frankenfurter. I was against it, and then I heard the director is Kenny Ortega, who did Hocus Pocus,
right?
And he did Michael Jackson's This Is It, and he's one of those guys that this is perfect. If it's going to be remade. And I think the choice of Laverne Fox is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the transgendered actress to play Frankenfurter is a good idea,
sure.
in my book. But if anyone's going to do it, it might as well be Kenny Ortega. So says Tar.
Well, that's what I thought when Tar Sim Singh did Cinderella.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The cast is kind of cool if you go through them. Entertainment Weekly just did a big reunion thing with them. And
speaking of which, Tim Curry was looking pretty good compared to...
I was just going to say how heartbreaking it was to see Tim Curry post-stroke, but...
Well, yeah, but we saw him also earlier post-stroke,
right.
And he looked a lot worse.
Right.
He's getting better.
I happened to see Curry twice live. Once my wife and I saw him in Me and My Girl at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco, and then once right around the time Fearless came out, he did a rock tour, and I saw him with a band.
Wow.
At the Old Waldorf, and to this day I think it's the best version I've ever heard of When a Man Loves a Woman.
Tim Curry is amazing, man. I think because of his roots, some folks don't give him the love that they should. He's an amazing actor.
There's a meme that says you can tell a lot about a man by which film he identifies,
right.
Tim Curry on.
I saw Tim Curry on like one of these crime procedurals. Not
Criminal Minds.
Yeah, Criminal
Minds.
And
it's super scary.
It is like he is like the creepiest.
Have you seen that, Heather?
I have not, but I think I would only want a boy who liked Legend.
Yeah.
That's the boy. That's the boy
that's
to have.
The boy.
Now the girl to have is someone who likes Clue.
Clue is wonderful. I love Clue.
Just the cast, and if she could wax on about Lloyd and everyone, that would be great.
Yeah. I the Criminal Minds thing, man. I mean, you see him in it, and it's like, you don't know who it is.
Right.
He's got grimy teeth, and he looks like a homeless person. And And
yeah, he looks really rough in that.
And it's scary. It's super scary. Yeah. He's one of those actors. Then you look at his IMDb, and then you look at all the voiceover work he did.
Yeah.
Ah, jeez.
Wasn't he the dad in Wild Thornberries?
I
think so.
I would say, yeah. And then we have Susan Sarandon. I'm in both. She's one of those actresses I'm ambivalent on. I think she did a good job here, even though she isn't quite known as a vocalist. I thought she carried her weight.
Sure.
Oddly enough,
I think the shining star out of this cast is Boswick.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and Boswick's hilarious. We interviewed him for the Night Crew once, and he's hilarious.
Yeah.
Susan Sarandon, one last thought on her, that she, up until recently, she would not talk about Rocky Horror because it was...
Very true.
It was a shitty experience for her. They wanted her to go nude, and she wouldn't. She was complaining that it was cold, and they wouldn't listen to her, and she ended up getting pneumonia. So she really hated the whole thing. I think this thing for Entertainment Weekly is the first time she's talked about it. But yeah, Boswick. Boswick was the first one also now to get involved in the Rocky Horror cons, and now him, Little Nell, and Patricia Quinn, they're like a traveling little package that will come to your convention, set up shop, they play the film, Boswick will get out there and do Brad in his underwear.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's great.
He's also a rarity in that he's a good actor who can sing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he sings really good in the film.
God, and then his comedic timing is great.
It's great.
I mean, his time on, what was that, Spin City?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so good. Richard O'Brien, again, other than, Richard O'Brien has a small part in, of all things, Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
He shows up.
I know, I love Richard O'Brien in Rocky.
Yes,
but I can't say it's his best performance, because his best performance is Dark City.
Yes.
Agreed.
Oh, my God.
He's so incredibly memorable and fierce and awesome.
Yeah, I forgot that he was in Dark City.
He is, man. He is great in Dark City.
He's almost more stunning than all of the effects in the film.
Yeah.
Or the storyline.
Yeah.
I would think he is. He is.
Yeah.
He doesn't have, he's the kind of guy that can only play a certain type of role.
Right.
Like,
he's either
call them character actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Made
yeah, yeah.
Number two, or. And that voice, you know,
that
weird
voice. He's
English
got
kind of thing going on. Patricia Quinn, great.
Yeah.
First thing that I sort of latched onto the first time I saw it, I thought,
ooh.
Well, yeah, she's pretty.
Exactly. When I was talking to a friend earlier today about, they had asked me favorite character.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, it's a toss-up, you know. First, I got to go with Frank and Riff Raff, just because they're so, so memorable. But, man, I had the hots for Magneta and Columbia.
Her and Little Nell, really, they were supposed to be, that entire thing was supposed to be one character. And they split it up.
Mm.
And they do a lot of the heavy lifting in scenes.
Yeah, they do
a lot of this expository stuff, as weird and as that is. You think about exposition in Rocky Horror Picture Show. Yeah, and Little Nell was a punk star back in the day. And after this, went on to have a fairly big career, where she was in Jubilee.
Yes.
She was in the movie Jubilee. She had a couple of hits. See You Around Like a Record was a fairly big.
Didn't she have a, like, something? I want to say Sex and Squalor, something.
Maybe she got involved with there was a documentary on a drag competition called I Want to Be a Beauty Queen that she's in, and she does a song for.
Huh.
I have all those songs on cassette.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And one thing to be said is that definitely her look is very UK punk, as is the look across the board for all those. She looks very much like a Sioux Catwoman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of lady.
And she
I was watching some makeup tutorials for Halloween for Rocky Horror, and I just saw, like, how they did their makeup, and it's like, God, that's exactly how I do my makeup.
Jonathan Adams played Dr. Scott. I know nothing about this man other than that he was perfectly cast.
He's great in that role, yeah.
Peter Hinwood, I guess he's now a shopkeeper in London somewhere, and people walk in and go, yeah, you were totally in Rocky Horror, and he's really nonplussed about it, doesn't really talk about it. Meatloaf.
He's like, are you going to buy something?
I know. Didn't sing in the recording of the movie. They dubbed his voice. That's why it sounds so weird.
So weird.
Yeah. Meatloaf is Meatloaf, you know?
Yeah, Meatloaf's great.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Meatloaf is
He's Robert Paulson.
He is Robert Paulson. Mm-hmm. But he, I don't know, something about Meatloaf, immediately, like, he was, again, perfect casting. Meatloaf's music and act in the 70s was,
yeah,
you know,
everything Jim Steinman was doing,
yeah,
was like, could have been Rocky Horror too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Bat Out of Hell is cut from that same plot. Yeah, yeah. The one guy that's really interesting to me is Charles Gray, who plays the narrator. Now, this guy was fucking Blofeld. He was James Bond's best friend,
right,
and he was also Blofeld. So him being there gives it this weight, and he's perfect as the narrator.
It makes you wonder if he's the name that enabled it to get made.
I don't know. It was already a successful
show.
So that's cool. The other couple of things I thought was interesting under trivia on the film is that Rocky, Frank, Dr. Frankenfurter's perfect man,
sure,
has fillings. I saw that in the trivia thing. I go, what a weird thing to sort of call out. But he does. He totally does. And
his acting is very weird, but I think also appropriate. Rocky,
he's suitably stiff.
Yeah.
Wide-eyed and stiff. Today, he would be played by Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Might be.
Dopey.
See, I always found Meatloaf's casting to be distracting, but that could come from my young eyes.
Well,
I felt like everybody wasn't super famous, and then, like, here's Meatloaf. And you can't help but to say, that's Meatloaf instead of Eddie the entire time with me watching
it.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem with that kind of stunt casting.
It is,
you know?
And he could have been appropriate. It could have been like when it came out, in its day, it was the most appropriate casting ever.
Yeah,
from
absolutely.
The eye. Now I still look at it and go, "There's Meatloaf."
There's Meatloaf.
Look at all these awesome characters, and there's Meatloaf. Because I think everybody's so cool, but like Meatloaf, he ain't cool.
Is it? But plus, I mean, really, do you call him Mr. Loaf?
If you're nasty.
Yeah. The record album soundtrack peaked at number 49 on Billboard, so it didn't really burn up the charts.
Right.
But the thing is it's always been there. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well,
it's
I
like
think
Dark Side of the Moon. It's always on the top.
Right.
Whatever.
I mean, Rocky Horror is the epitome of the underground hit. I mean, it's never going to be number one. It's never, you know, it's never going to be a Jurassic World, but it's always going to be there, and it's always going to have this huge loyal fan base.
Right,
it exists forever.
Yeah, regardless of the generation.
And regardless of what we think.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, at least it's this sort of walks hand in hand because of the time frame with Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah.
Phantom of the Paradise, I feel, owns the space.
Do you?
I think it's what the cool kids think. Yeah, I think it's
a cool kid.
Cool kid. Well, you know, if we're talking about the best one in the space, I guess it depends on your elitism. If you're very elitist like me, you say Forbidden Zone.
Yeah.
That's what you say if you're very elitist. If you're populist, you go with Rocky Horror. If you want to cause trouble, Shock Treatment. But
okay.
If you want to be sort of your average horror fan, it's going to be Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah.
But that's a very small space you're living in because there's like six films there.
Right,
right, right.
But I would say like
seven.
Probably the best, yeah, the best put together is probably Phantom. out of everything. But yes, I would prefer to watch Forbidden Zone, but it's not achieving every, because it's like fandom is like Rocky Horror, but like De Palma made it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it became before it. And there, looking at Beef, look at Beef.
There
That's
are,
Frank.
Right.
There are things in Phantom of the Paradise that I like, but generally, I know.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
We've talked about this on multiple podcasts.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I just don't get the love that people heap on Phantom of the Paradise.
So, because of, we now have Repo, the Genetic Opera. We have other things like that. And I know how I feel about Repo. What is the general, but I don't know what the world thinks of, is there a loyal fan base? Are there people that, like, love Repo?
Yes.
Spooky Dan follows, used to follow it, now he's doing all that work with Devil's Carnival.
Right.
Which is another one.
Yeah, which is another one that...
There's a second one of those, right? Hallelujah?
Yeah. I haven't seen it. I saw the first one. I'm not.
Someone has to make musicals for Hot Topic children.
Yeah.
And theater geeks.
The problem is, though, that I think that it fulfills the requirement of what you say.
Yes.
But it doesn't fulfill it in a way that makes you think, well, there's going to be a lot more musicals. Because there's not. It just gives you enough that, like, with those few fans that dig that kind of thing, here you go.
Right.
But it's not a broad-based hit kind of a thing.
Right.
They do okay.
There's
well,
a lot...
they're all playing in the goth industrial, like, punk space, which is interesting. All the aesthetics of the horror rock. I'm specifically saying horror rock because then Little Shop of Horrors doesn't get in there.
Right. And by the way, Little Shop of Horrors, I think more than any other film, sits next to Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Absolutely.
They talk about being cut from the same cloth.
It has the same sort of love for the same material.
Right. Steve Martin finally got to do that.
Can we go? I wanted to go through the songs.
Yeah.
Because I really, there's some really genius stuff in here, and it's not the stuff that I think a lot of people talk about. The film opens with Science Fiction Double Feature, which I think is, why isn't this a horror anthem?
It should be. That is like one of the greatest songs ever, just period.
Would you agree,
Heather?
Ms. Buckley?
Is the best song?
No, that it's, why isn't this a horror anthem?
Because it doesn't, because Rocky Horror Picture Show, though horror is in the title, doesn't necessarily belong to the horror world.
But the topic of the song is so steeped in genre, you know, it's the
the most powerful song on that album is Sweet Transvestite.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
It's definitely the main set piece.
I can sing them all, but Sweet Transvestite has some goddamn energy to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what horror's anthem is. I think horror's anthem is probably some sort of metal song.
If we're going to go,
Science Fiction Double Feature is the song for monster kids.
Yeah.
If you're of a certain age, that's
song. That's true. That's true. It does speak to monster kid and not all of horror.
For me, I really like Over at the Frankenstein Place, but I'm going to get really, really specific.
Okay.
And that's listen to Over at the Frankenstein Place and tune out everything except for Barry Boswick's harmony vocals, because they're fucking amazing. They support the rest of the melody in a way that you don't even hear it, but it's pitch perfect. So that's your homework. And it's the first reveal on Riff Raff.
Right.
I'm skipping over Damn It Janet because I really hate that song.
That is an
annoying song.
The spirit of that song is carried on in Evil Dead the Musical over and over and over again. Yeah.
Well, my favorite part of all of that is the interplay in the crowd at the wedding. which are obviously all the Transylvanians,
right.
and Tim Curry's there, and Patricia Quinn and stuff. But it's almost like they knew with the way it's timed that a person would deliver a line. You know, I always cry at weddings, and then there's this pregnant pause afterward. Like, they
right.
knew someone was going to say something. And for you keeping score at home, the proper responses, and laugh at funerals. Sweet Transvestite, Time Warp and Sweet Transvestite, they're showstoppers.
Yeah.
And the rest of the movie, as we've said numerous times, does not equal those heights.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, it's like I said, it's like it seems real schizophrenic to me. It's like it's almost like this is great, and then like somebody ran out of steam. I don't know.
Well, I think they felt at this point, okay, we've got our nubile youngsters into this decadent situation.
Right.
Now, what do we do? So that's why with the introduction of I Can Make You a Man, now that's just plot,
right.
plot. I'm Dr. Frankenstein, I'm making a man, blah, 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 blah. Maybe a little character development here and there. Straight into the introduction of Eddie, who's only introduced so that he can be killed.
Right.
And then the I Can Make You a Man reprise, which I think is better than the main song. So there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I listened to Tim Curry's reading on it.
Right.
It's more. I think it's more playful and it's more in the moment. And I think that I just think it's really funny.
This was the stage show was Curry's kind of first.
Yeah, and this was his first
anything,
film.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. He did. I think he did some Shakespeare stuff with the Royal Shakespeare people. I know he was in Three Men in a Boat on BBC TV. So now you got the introduction of the Frankenstein myth. Touch me, shrill and annoying.
Yeah.
You agree, Heather?
Yes, shrill and annoying. even the scene is not really inspired.
Yeah.
The setup.
It's literally like children figuring out.
Would probably make sense in a theater.
Yeah.
Watching it. But I don't know. It's not cinematic the way that it's put together. That's one thing I was going to mention if we just move slightly away from the songs, but it makes sense with the songs. When I was revisiting some of the musical numbers, it's shot good,
mm-hmm.
and then it's shot so bad, Rocky
yeah.
Horror Picture Show.
Right.
There's some unbelievably awkward shots during the musical numbers. Also, not shooting everything in a wide.
Mm-hmm.
And going to a medium or going, yeah.
Right, it's put together wrong.
A lot of the
it's completely put together wrong.
A lot of the performances also, there's these weird pregnant pauses, like waiting for the next line. And I think that comes from most of the people having been in the stage play.
Sure.
Because, you know, meter is different. At that point, I want to interject that there was supposed to be a song called Once in a While that they shot footage for, and they ended up cutting it, and it would have gone right in between Touch Me and Eddie.
I've not seen it. Is it on a like a Blu-ray
yeah,
or anything?
Yeah, again, it's on one of the Blu-rays
many
collections.
Releases.
And it's awful.
Okay.
It's more of a... in the middle of all this, it's this sort of Brad staring out a window and singing a song thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's just it's ponderous and it just robs the film of all of its momentum. The introduction of Eddie as a corpse is next, which is loaded with great, I think, great sight gags.
Right.
And great inside jokes. Yeah. Fun. I feel like I'm losing you guys.
It's just that it's because of, I don't know, the lack of oomph in the second half. I don't care.
The songs just clip by, and it's like they're only there so that you, when the credits roll, you'll
the ending is cool.
Yeah,
I
the whole
like
floor show
yeah.
is great.
Right. Yeah.
Visually, it's super cool.
But I have to slog through all that other crap to get to it.
Yeah, there has to be a reason for enough of a reason for Riff Raff and Magenta to rebel to finally say, "Fuck this, we're bugging out."
Right.
So, you know, I get why they needed to do it, but even when they sit there, when they break through the door and he says, "I'm your new commander," or whatever.
Right.
He says at one point, he goes, you know, "Your mission is a failure. Your lifestyle's too extreme." It's like, compared to what? You're fucking your sister. Morally, this is not the time to take the high ground. I'm going home again. How many times have you seen that performed at a drag show? Thousands.
I have not.
Haven't you?
I've never seen it performed on a drag show. Not that I've been to too many drag shows, but no one's ever done Frank. I've not even been to a shadow cast. I saw it once in college when I was at my friend in upstate New York, because I wanted to see it in its original ratio.
Mm.
This was before it came out, you know, letterbox or widescreen.
Oh, so
I got to see it projected on film, which is another interesting part of the ritual. Mm. I don't know if it's gone to high def now, but it has. But when I saw it, it's almost like seeing repertory cinema every week, because it was projected on film, projected on film, projected on film.
The worst thing that can happen to people nowadays is they sit someone down that's never seen Rocky Horror, and they go, "Well, I have the Blu-ray."
Right.
And they play it, because they're like, "I don't get it." Because by seeing it live, then you get the rice, and you get the toast, and you get the rain, and you get the asshole, and you get all the fun.
Right.
But seeing it if you sit there and if I were to put this film on now and watch it, you're right, shut it off. Not because the songs weren't good. I'd probably end up shutting it off right around the end of Sweet Princess. Go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say.
I'll end with this. One of my favorite songs beside the biggies is Superheroes, which initially on some theaters it was cut. Superheroes is a nice little song that wraps everything up. It gives the narrator an opportunity to say his last piece.
Sure.
And it's suitably poetic, and then he walks out, shuts off the light, and we fade to black.
You mean lost in time, lost in space, in meaning?
Yeah. The song, there was a song before that. Yeah. There was a song before with Brad and Janet and Dr. Scott on the ground in their underwear.
I've only ever seen that version.
Yeah, it's great. When I was coming up, our print didn't have Superheroes, and there was a weird cut right after Eddie's killed.
Hmm.
And then it was this giant sort of cut, and then Frankenfurter was always... They're already well on their way to doing the wedding march.
Huh.
Yeah, I know this.
Who paid the people to stay late to do the projection?
The theater.
Was it the theater?
Because it would sell out.
Crazy.
And the shadow cast didn't get any money. I was paid in flesh. No.
What did you play,
I was going to say. I was going to say something else what you were paid in. But
yeah.
Flesh will
that's also considered flesh.
The group that was there only had one opening, and that was Riff Raff. And I had really long hair that wouldn't fit under a skull cap.
Right.
So I just did it without it. And it worked. It worked okay. And we used to do really goofy shit, like we did the time warp, and we actually brought out a guitar. And I played with interestingly enough, you see echoes, not only echoes, but you'll see Drew Carey has done whole episodes around them going to the Rocky Horror Picture
Show. Oh, that's cool.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things. I don't want to say Saved by the Bell, but a lot of those type shows, when it was hip, they would wink to their audience and their awesomeness if they
Roseanne.
Did a Rocky Horror episode, yes.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, this movie not only was a gateway for me to explore alternative sexuality and things like that, but it was also a gateway to check out musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I've said before, like, I'm not a huge musical fan. It has to be something very specific.
Like Paint Your Wagon, yes.
Yeah.
Right, like Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah. No, I get it, you know, because it was like, you couldn't even, I remember when I said more than two times in a row, telling your buddies, no, I think I'm going to go down to that theater again, and because there's chicks there, and blah, blah, blah. But four, five, six times down the road every week, and they're like, dude, we need to talk.
I would have never seen, the amazing milestone that is the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton and Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Well, you know,
if it wasn't for this
the
movie.
The theater that I played, that we went to, they used to run, they ran the Paradise Garage video before the movie started.
Right.
And I'm thinking of it now to this day. You know, when everyone hears the drumming for the 20th Century Fox, everyone thinks Star Wars, right?
Right.
I immediately think Rocky Horror. I immediately think, like, where's my stuff? Yeah, I still, to this day, oh, shit, where's my feather duster?
Sad.
Sad. But it's I would love to see more of this kind of thing done.
Absolutely. It's surprising that it's not.
You know, why hasn't, who's the guy that did Buffy? Is that Joss Whedon?
Yeah.
Why hasn't he done a musical? He did Dr. Terrible's sing-along blog.
Right, that's kind of, sort of. Yeah,
kind of.
I have not seen it.
Have you not?
Oh, Heather.
No.
Oh, it's wonderful. No.
It is.
It's,
I've seen snippets in my life.
It's mainstream.
Never seen that.
I think that first...
I watch mainstream stuff. I like Star Wars.
The song in the laundromat, I think, is the wordplay of that is
yeah,
sheer
it's great.
Brilliance.
It's great.
It's brilliant.
Again, I don't think could have been done by another cast. The cast was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And all the stuff about... This isn't about Dr. Terrible, but all the stuff about the main crime boss, the horse guy.
Yeah.
Fucking hilarious.
You know, earlier we were talking about how you don't see I can't remember what we were talking about, but Heather said she had not seen that song performed at drag shows.
Oh, okay.
And I think that a lot of people, because this is so popular and kind of visited by so many, like I said, tourists.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are kind of like, oh, yeah, that.
Right.
Because that's, you know, it's not real.
Well, I think it's one of those things that people, again, it's the entry point for a lot of people, and it being the entry point, it's real quick, you're real quick to move past it.
Right.
And so you look back in with derision. Sure, I get it.
Yeah.
But there's so much other stuff to look at presently with derision, like Repo the Genetic Opera.
Right.
I mean, someone as cool as me was able to dig it, and I dig why it's an important gateway drug, and I think it shouldn't be forgotten for what it's done. And hopefully, as people go to theaters less, the people who love Rocky go to theaters more to see their movie.
Yeah.
And hopefully, because in New York City at Nighthawk, and I don't know Alamo, but I know Alamo out in Austin, where it's easier to get to than Yonkers, is that there's all these sing-alongs, the movies. I think that all comes from Rocky.
Yeah.
It all comes from this audience participation, which really didn't exist, and you weren't allowed to talk at the theater because that's very taboo. But now you're allowed to dress up and perform at the theater every single weekend.
Sure.
And
sure.
I'd love to see more of that. I mean, don't try to redo Rocky like something like Repo.
Right.
It doesn't move stuff forward.
Well,
it's like when we figure out other ways to use the theater for interaction, right?
Well, they tried to do it with Reanimator, and it bounced.
You can't try to do it.
I think
what happens is they make it happen. I think that's a lot of the sin which really got me upset with Repo when it came out.
Yeah.
Was the force. Forcing it into a midnight movie slot, forcing
right.
it into the Rocky Horror slot, which is why it only evolved to be like Rocky Horror.
Well,
it didn't become its own thing. So you have to find these movies, and they become a cult. You don't manufacture a cult.
What's funny about Repo is on all the EPK stuff, the press stuff, everyone involved was saying, well, we're not trying to be Rocky Horror. And it's like, oh, I beg to differ.
Yeah, you so are. Right. Because they know. They know that same that exact thing that Heather was just talking about. You can't, as soon as you try to become anything, you're, with rare exception, automatically become lame.
Yeah.
It's true, because Rocky Horror didn't try. You know why? Because when it came out, it bombed, and it was considered to be lame.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know,
a lot of great midnight movies are, and that's always the discussion of midnight movies are, something like midnight movies, are we consciously campy and therefore we're not a midnight movie? Or are we like Ishtar and that we didn't mean to be a midnight movie and people became obsessed with it?
I've always hated the blurb on a movie, an instant cult classic.
Yeah.
Because that makes no damn sense whatsoever.
I don't know. Something like Striking Hooker is an instant cult classic.
I like that. It's like what they are still trying to do with The Room.
Oh, God.
I always felt like The Room
was... The Room has its own obsession around it. I think it's hipsters. But that's a hipster thing, is that they love that idea.
Mm.
It plays all the time at, I believe, the Sunshine in Manhattan, The Room.
Yeah.
And people are... I will never see it, because it looks like... Is this... And I go, is this the Urban Outfitter version of Rocky Horror Picture Show? If yes, I'm not going to see it.
It's awful.
I think the reason why The Room carries a fascination for some people is that, what's his face, Wizu,
with yeah.
I think he genuinely thought he was doing something good.
Yeah,
he was
Ed
sincere.
There's an Ed Wood thing about it.
Right, and that makes it fascinating for a lot of people, because if it was anybody else doing it, it's like, this is just, what are you doing? But this guy thought he was doing something good,
yeah,
I think. And so that's...
He says he wants to do a Marvel movie.
Oh, God, he wants... Yeah. Did you see his horrible...
I want him to do a Marvel movie. He has to stop making cult movies for hipsters, and Marvel, the big studio, should embrace him.
$200 million and give him, like... Let Tommy, whatever his name is, reboot Spider-Man.
Dude, give him Fantastic Four. Nobody else has been able to do it.
Do it. Don't you want to see
Could
that?
Could you imagine?
Want to see that more than anything else on Earth?
Yeah. Tommy Wiseau's Fantastic Four is the shit.
Imagine it. It makes me so happy. That's like, really, it's like Hollywood, let's go into a demolition derby. That's what I want to see.
This is important. Let's work on that. If you can hear my voice, we are all going to start an internet meme or a legend that Tommy Wiseau has been given the rights to the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Fantastic Four. And if you're listening, you're in on the joke.
Fucking, that's funny, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my brain is just popping off of that.
I want to hear more Shadowcast stories. How much time do we have?
We have about a half hour.
Good.
No. My Shadowcast stories are all involving a young Tom and it being 1979. We'll just say that.
Right.
And, yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah.
Me and my sister was in the cast, so how bad could it be?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. How deviant is your sister?
Well, I did play Riff Raff, so they...
Ba-doom, boom.
I think, you know, plus this... when I was back in the day, this was cosplay before cosplay.
Yeah.
Think of that. I'm just thinking of that as I sit here and rub my wounded back. Yeah, because it was, I remember the push to get it right. No, there was blood on this spat, not the left spat, it was on the right spat, or you know, what have you. And it was the same level of detail that people... That
I have to imagine that the Max's Kansas City crowd had to have loved this when it first came out, when it was playing as a stage show. I mean, the folks who dug New York Dolls,
mm-hmm.
the folks who dug, like... This seems like it would be in their wheelhouse.
I want to say it came out of that same place, right? O'Brien, he's from London, right?
Yeah, but
so
Max,
he wouldn't. It wouldn't have been New York.
No,
Bill,
that's New York. Yeah, that's what the
old
New York. Like, there's a difference between CBGBs and Max's, and,
right,
and the kind of.
There is CBGB dirty punk rockness, crazy bathrooms, fucked up shit. I mean, Max's was a little more rock star,
huh,
but
yeah,
just by a bit. It's like
a little
like
more
gutter
champagne.
Rock star. Yeah, gutter rock stars drinking champagne. Could still hang out with Johnny Thunders in both clubs, but then you would also hang out with, like, yeah.
I just thought of, okay.
It's like a green room for them.
Here's a good one, and you'll appreciate this of all people.
Okay.
One night we were doing the show. Some guys, some bros, had brought water balloons, and guy was getting ready to throw one at the cast. Walked up behind him, blocked the arm, popped the balloon, thought I was in, like, ha-ha! A second passed, and I was vaguely picking up my stuff on the other side of the theater with a bloody mouth, and I don't remember a lick of it.
Just really, yeah.
It was like time traveling. One minute, I was, like, all smug, like, ha-ha! And the next minute... Yeah, picking up my shit off the ground and bleeding from the mouth.
That's the cool thing about getting knocked out, though, is that you're not around to experience the humiliation, really.
Yeah.
But the moments when you were trying to, like, your body was flopping and you were trying to get up, you don't remember any of that shit.
Yeah, I don't remember any.
Thank God there weren't video cameras.
Right? Yeah. That's hilarious.
That's...
I'm still working on this Fantastic Four idea. So we've got a little bit of time left. Is there anything else we want to talk about? I think we've pretty much beat Rocky Horror today.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk
about
anything?
God bless Rocky Horror.
Any news of what's going on?
Ash versus the Evil Dead, first episode came out.
How was that?
Fucking awesome. It was, you know how we were all like, yeah, whatever, and then we saw the trailer, mm-hmm, and it was like, oh. It is. It is exactly what you
should be. Can I be a naysayer?
Should be.
Yeah.
You can be a naysayer all you want. I'll say that you're wrong. But, yeah, go ahead.
It's the same exact thing. When I watched it, it's like, oh, I've seen this all before.
It is.
Tumbleweed.
This is I see it as introducing an entire new generation to that.
Well, the background of it is this, from my press junkety world, is that it's Evil Dead 4. Raimi kept calling it Evil Dead 4 when I spoke to him.
Right.
And it seems like they had the script, they rejiggered it into a Star series because they wanted something that was unrated, and both him and Campbell keep saying it's like, well, it has blood and guts, it's more the same, I wanted to move away from my stuff, it's more the same. It's like, are they being, like, grumpy people using hyperbole to me? And then I saw it, and it's like, wait a minute, it's exactly the same. And I remember him talking to another press guy next to me, and he said it's like, he doesn't like to work in the medium because it's not broad or big enough.
Well, here's the thing, is that something like Evil Dead, if you go outside of what it is, I think Evil Dead is one of those franchises where you have to do the same. You got to give the fans what...
Because they're the horror fans, and they're the mainstream horror fans, so no offense, kids, but they're not very smart.
Right, and it's...
No, they don't. I mean,
I agree.
They like their Michael Myers.
Right.
They like their Leatherface.
I like my Leatherface.
I know.
That's why
I'm not saying that.
That's
not everybody.
That's why I didn't like the Evil Dead remake.
Mm.
Is because it's just like, it's not Evil Dead, you know? Without,
I did not like the Evil Dead remake because it was fucking lazy as hell.
Yeah, agreed.
You have all
this
extra money. Right, okay, so you have the first one made on nothing. Monsters are made of acrylic paint. The second one was a remake and then a whole redo of it. And then we have better special effects. We have, like, Chad and Shay, K&B guys, great stuff. Credible, because the budget's bigger, so the movie can be bigger. And then when we look at the remake, you have all this budget, new technology. It's like, what, 2014 that it came out, or 2013. And it's like, you have contact lenses and hot chicks. That's all you have.
Well, I'm gonna stick up for the practical effects.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna shit all over it because the idea of them going out for some kind of rehab thing
was super lazy.
Yeah. Super lazy and super lame and super cliche.
Well, yeah, the script was horrible when it came down to that.
Great.
But yeah, then again, you got to look at the roots. And I can't believe I'm defending because I don't like that movie. I do love the effects, though. That went, oh, man, some of that stuff is hard.
Some of it is great.
Hard to watch.
Yeah.
Evil Dead, you know, and I think Raimi denies this, but anybody who's ever seen Equinox, it's a direct ripoff of Equinox, unless they just happen to coincidentally come up with the same ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So you're already copying a movie that's made by kids on 16mm that is not that great of a movie, spawned these huge effects careers for mm-hmm. Dennis Muir and Phil Tippett. Jim Danforth was involved with it. All the cats who... Basically, the people who made Star Wars made this really awful movie, and Evil Dead is a direct
mm-hmm.
copy of that movie, I in my opinion.
Hmm.
So I don't think it could ever go too... You know, it's like you started out with the bar... already low, and I think it's just going
to
be lower.
But I'm willing to check this thing out.
Gotta watch the show. I tell you what I really liked about it. It equally balances scenes. You have funny and fucking scary. Funny, fucking scary. Like, it does that really, really well.
Yeah. Raimi does that really, really well.
Number two of the first one, because I felt the first one wasn't that funny.
Mm.
Is more relentless, and I know inspired by Chainsaw.
Yeah,
definitely inspired by Chainsaw. Did he come out and talk about his inspiration of Equinox?
No, that's what I'm saying is I believe he denies it, but I can't believe it after watching Equinox, and then you watch Evil Dead, and you're like, he's got to have seen this. Like,
yeah.
Because it's just so similar, similar.
So check it out. Yeah, I'll watch an episode or two, even though I hate TV.
Yeah.
But
tell you what, it's only half an hour long. It's a good short jab. By the time you're sick of it, you're out.
Right.
I feel it's pretty much the same. Yeah, they brought that up too. It's half hour, so it's like old school genre time for horror series. Yeah, because I think the relentlessness you could only keep up for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone see the footage, the Halloween footage Ryan Reynolds released today?
No.
The Deadpool thing?
Yeah, I guess during the shooting of Deadpool, he stole, quote unquote, one of the Deadpool suits, and he took his kids, a bunch of kids trick-or-treating.
That was cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty, it's very endearing.
Cool.
What do we think about they announced Bad Santa 2?
Oh,
I know, I care.
Do you care?
I do.
No.
I know. I just think if they had done this a year after, maybe, but this is just screams cash grab.
I gotta say, man, I know like a lot of people really like Bad Santa. I can't stand Bad Santa. It is, I don't like, but I mean, this is me not being objective. It's so mean-spirited.
Yeah,
and I hate that. Like, I just can't get behind a character, even if there's some kind of redemption. He's just too mean.
I suggest our listeners to watch Scrooge again.
Scrooge, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They announced yesterday this Creed thing is literally relaunching Rocky. So it's gonna be a bunch of boxing movies that have. By this point, spoiler, I think Stallone dies in Creed. Rocky dies in Creed.
Yeah.
And
well, that disappoints me that he wasn't killed by Rambo, because I was waiting for that to happen. Yeah,
And then Netflix announced the Gilmore Girls. They're going to go back and do more Gilmore Girls, which I know a lot of people are excited about.
Yeah, okay.
I had a little girl, so Gilmore Girls.
I never watched the Gilmore Girls, but when I used to substitute teach, the kids would tell me that I reminded them of the girls from the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, because you're...
I think they talk
fast. Yeah, and you Yeah, you use big words. Go ahead.
use my words. Yeah. What they're there for.
Fucking Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, let's talk about Bone Tomahawk before I get to this one last thing.
Yeah.
You saw it.
Tapped out. And then watched the whole thing.
I dug it,
wait,
man.
Wait. Yes. Tapped out because you didn't like it, or tapped out because you got...
Boring. If I watched another slow burn horror film, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. I'm literally going to lose my fucking mind. We watch horror not for it to last at the last 15 minutes of a film.
Okay.
So it's like, while I was watching, it's like, you don't have great dialogue. You're not shot very interestingly.
Oh, I know it. Hold on. I'm sensing a Fantastic Fest debate. Langley and Heather.
I saw it there.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, so you're... Finish your thoughts on why you dislike it, because I would also like to hear why Langley liked it.
All right, because you're going to make a Western. You have one way of going. It's like you make a beautiful Western that doesn't really have a strong narrative, so there's a lot of the Sergio Leone films that are dealing with icons and symbols and everything. It's beautiful to watch, so you really don't care what's happening on the screen. It's like, I got great actors to look at, and my God, look at the way this shot. Okay, if you're not doing that, you live in the world of Deadwood. Deadwood is not shot very beautifully, but has amazing actors and hella dialogue to watch being acted in front of you. It's like, this is incredible. I'm engaged with these characters. I think Bone Tomahawk was shot very bland. The direction of Kurt Russell. To not make him exciting.
Kurt motherfucking Russell.
Motherfucking Russell. And it's just, when they got to the camp, they were going out, and the kill at the beginning with Sid Haig, it's just, no. And I heard it gets better in the second half, but I just couldn't care, because it's like, I'm done watching slow burn films. I spent an entire fest watching all movies where nothing happens except for at the end.
Okay.
Horror should happen through a horror film. I'm allowing it to happen this day. What time is it? I'm in New Jersey. It is 11:57. When you make a horror film, you're allowed to make the whole thing a horror film, not just less.
Okay, so counterpoint.
Everything that Heather just said is true, and that is why this film is awesome. Actually, I disagree. I think the dialogue is brilliant. I love the dialogue. They talk like old timers do back where I grew up. You don't say what happened, you say what transpired.
Hmm.
You don't say, you know, it's you refer to something that's rotting as it's mortified.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's excellent. I too was disappointed in the lack of a cinematic look to the film. I was hoping for that.
This wasn't
based on the
John
poster.
Ford, right?
No, not at all. But as a result of that, it winds up feeling very, very real. I don't mean like a found footage film or a documentary, but it's what you see. You
watch Ravenous saying? Instead.
Huh?
Watch Ravenous instead.
I think this is...
You think better than Ravenous?
Do you think
I don't think it's better than Ravenous.
They would go on the shelf next to
it. It would sit, yeah, this sits comfortably on the shelf next to it.
Ravenous is not shot cinematically, but I love the story. More, I love the story and then the acting, so...
Yeah. The things in this, the natives, the troglodytes, whatever, the cannibals, they are terrifying. And there's something that happens, and you're like, through the whole movie, you're like, why is this happening? And I don't want to give it away, because it's not a big thing, but when you realize why this is, you're like, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. You're right. Most of the action happens at the end. It is a slow burn movie, but I never got tired of it. I was moving right along with the characters. All the actors are great. There's a particular character, and I don't know the actor who played him. The character's name is Chicory, and he's great. It is not a Kurt Russell film. Like if you go there to watch Kurt Russell, you will be disappointed.
Right.
Kurt Russell is our kind of our main guy, but not really. He's
I know. Why make a film where you're showcasing the Russell?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that the poster kind of leads you in another direction. As long as you're able to kind of let go of that, it's a great film. I loved it.
I went back and watched Captain Ron instead.
It has. It has. If I'm going to do that, I watch Sky High. It has this, a practical effect in it that is frighteningly real.
Right on.
And so painful to watch. Very, 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 very little music in the whole thing. Consequently, it feels very, very real, very naturalistic. It looks and feels like you're there.
Right on.
It is not a horror film.
I mean, it's definitely something I want to see just because, you know, Kurt Russell's the man.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about, today they released 15 seconds of footage from this Warcraft movie. Did anyone see it?
No.
I think I was napping.
Yeah. So was I, and I was watching it. It looks a mess. It looks like Lord of the Rings by way of a video game.
That's kind of what Warcraft is, isn't it?
Yeah, just awful. I mean, yeah. It doesn't even look particularly cool, you know, what I saw.
Right.
But then I have no connection to it, where if they show something, I'm not going to go, oh, they showed that dude.
Right.
Where I think other people do or did.
Right.
Yeah,
I think you got to be a fan of the game to even care.
I
see a CGI Fest movie over the weekend that I really enjoyed that Russian film, V,
yeah.
Forbidden Empire.
Okay.
It had some jaw-dropping, beautiful stuff in it. The movie as a whole is kind of goofy, but it has some amazing, just like, whoa, where did that come from? There's this thing in the swamp where it comes down, and it's surrounded by like thousands of vine-like hands. And it has this long things hanging from its face. And you're like, what is that? And it's like, pull back my eyelids. It's its eyelids. Its eyelids, like, hang down to the...
Weird.
And then these things pull the eyelids back so it can see. Dude, it has some of the most disturbing, cool imagery in it.
What do we think of this sci-fi is going to do an all-female Van Helsing?
That's whatever.
All right.
I mean, to me, Van Helsing is always like, in my mind, Van Helsing is Sherlock Holmes. He's a Sherlock Holmes kind of guy.
So you could have Shirley Holmes.
There you go. You could have Shirley Holmes.
But it all sounds like, you know, League of Extraordinary Women. You know what I mean? It just seems like such pandering. Like, we've got it.
Well, think of it. You live in a world where every single solitary group is all white male. We don't need to say that because that's normal. It's normal to have an all-boy team. It is not normal to have an all-girl team. Hence why you will keep hearing about it
right.
until it becomes normal. And
no,
then when that's all normal, then we have the whole trans team, and hopefully we get around to it. We can create diversity and multicultural in a society where we never ever have to mention these things again. Because it's not a selling point. It's not exotic. It's exotic now. That's
so why tag Van Helsing in all of this?
That's my thing. I don't.
Chicks like vampires. They do.
The fact that it's an all-girl cast means nothing to me.
Right.
I just think... I know it's going to be like some crazy action bullshit.
And it's sci-fi.
It's right.
So it's going to be this weird...
Well, that can never be trusted for good stuff anyway.
What's that?
I can't be trusted for good stuff anyway. They're making their Sharknadoes.
Right.
Yeah. You know what? I would want to see an all-woman Sharknado where the shark itself is a woman.
Yes.
But a traditional woman where it has beads around its neck, a bow, and lipstick.
Right.
Right.
Like Miss Pac-Man. Like
Fuck
that. Miss like, Sharknado.
By the way,
that's just it. Naked.
So I'm watching something or other the other day, and it's some news thing, and they're talking about The Flash.
The TV series?
Show.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what was happening, but all of a sudden they show a scene from it. And,
right.
And the Flash gets confronted by, I guess his name is Killer Shark, but on TV today there is a guy who is a big bodybuilder type guy, and his head is a shark, and it's the weirdest thing in the world. And I just thought, how are people watching this thing?
My wife has recently started binge watching Flash.
The Flash?
Yeah.
I hear it's
good.
Great. So, I have not watched it at all.
I've seen parts of it. I think it's some of the most juvenile crap I've ever. It's not science, but it's so. I don't know. I could see where if you're a comic book person, you're gonna love it.
Yeah. Well, what gets me with a lot of these Marvel things, and then we'll do this, and then we'll get out of here. But
this is a DC thing.
Well, yeah, all of it is. Well, whatever, Marvel, DC. I call it Marvel, but I mean all, the whole kit and caboodle. Is that a lot of times now, fans are just happy to see the guy that walks. They have just a guy walk by, and you or I would go, the guy walks by, but these fans are like, oh, that was so and so from this issue of that, and I'm like. Wow.
But it's
I have to admire Marvel, and I guess DC's copying it, but their level of cross-pollinization. I mean, everything seems to be sort of coming together in their basic plan.
Same thing with this thing. DC's got, you know, the Arrow and Flash are
in each
other's shows a lot.
Mother's like, I could care less.
Well, here's the thing about that reaction. Do you remember when we had Shannon on and he dropped a little bomb for us that the project he was wanting to do?
Yeah.
And we both lost our minds. Most people would go, so what?
Yeah.
So I get it when these guys flip out whenever somebody spandex walks by. Yeah.
It's a big thing. I mean, that's why all the studios are doing it. It's huge. An example, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I'll post about my love of horror films and all that junk that doesn't matter. But the second I drop shit about a superhero thing, comic books, even people that I know that are hardcore horror fans that have never discussed with me their love of superheroes, the feedback and engagement is crazy.
Right.
So I felt it works. It works under all gender, all ages, regardless of what you like. I was never a superhero person. Reading the superhero comics that I read were Nightbreed and Hellraiser and Jihad the Crossover. So I don't get it. I'll watch it if it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'll watch stuff like Iron Man because it's fun. Or if like Thor is on like HBO, I'll put it on the background because it's pretty swirly colors.
Right.
I just don't get excited. I mean, if they made a really dark Arkham Asylum-facing Batman film, I'm very excited about Batman films, but I need it to be, like, dark and stylistic. I don't know about this new one coming out.
The only thing I'm hopeful for out of all of it is Doctor Strange. I think Doctor Strange may be something different, but we'll see.
Didn't they want Tilda for that? Am I incorrect?
She's in it.
Yeah,
they won't say who's in it, who she is in it, but she's definitely in it. So
I want her to be Doctor Strange.
All right, I guess that's about 90, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, so we're done for this week. So that's episode 53, Rocky Horror Picture Show and some news. So for the Bonus Material Podcast, I'm Tom Carnell.
I'm Heather Buckley.
I'm Langley West.
We'll see you next time.
Stay scared.